Hello, hello, Lisa here. Since you're listening to this particular podcast, I imagine you're likely a leader in the area of talent, HR, people, culture, L&D, employee experience, or OD. Are you also a talent leader who is longing for a safe sounding board to bounce ideas off of? Who's thirsty for some fresh new ideas that will actually work? Who maybe needs to influence multiple stakeholders who don't always know what they want? Maybe you're somebody who wants to get out of their own way and who's ready for expert, ongoing, and confidential mentoring. If you answered yes to one or more of those statements, then we need to talk. In addition to my group programs, I work privately with a select few clients as their talent management thought partner. I will help you, over the next 90 days, finally create the space, the intention, and the strategy to implement an initiative that's critical to your team's longer-term impact and legacy. Let's chat and see if there's a fit. Book me online at greenappleconsulting.ca/contact. Welcome to Talent Management Truths. I'm your host, Lisa Mitchell. I'm a talent management thought partner and results coach, wife, and mom. Talent management leaders are hungry to learn from their peers and want to hear about real-life talent initiatives. This podcast is for and by talent management leaders. My guests and I dig into successes, challenges, and lessons learned from a very practical, not theoretical, point of view. You'll discover important insights about how to elevate your confidence and amplify your influence in a role known for being caught in the organizational middle. I'm thrilled to have you listening. So let's get going and hear the truth about talent management today. Do you like ESOPs? Most people do. Wondering if maybe it's small alien species on a planet in the Star Wars universe? Nope. ESOP stands for Employee Share Ownership Plan, and it's an acronym used frequently by wholly employee-owned companies. In today's episode, my guest shares what she loves about working in HR in an ESOP environment. We also spend some time in the latter part of the episode talking about advocating for support for women in the workforce, from parental leaves to daycare subsidies. My guest is Christy Spindler, Human Resources Director at Dakota Supply Group. She has nearly 20 years of HR experience leading HR teams focused on company growth and engagement. Christy lives with her husband and two daughters in Fargo, North Dakota, and holds a master's degree in organizational management. In this episode of Talent Management Truths, you'll discover the advantages of doing HR in an employee-owned business with an ESOP, and ideas for what you can do if you don't work in an employee-owned business. Thoughts on the importance of people leaders on team engagement, and why advocating for women in the workforce is important, and ideas on how to do it. Thanks for listening. Enjoy. Hello, and welcome back to Talent Management Truths. I'm your host, Lisa Mitchell, and today I'm joined by Christy Spindler. Christy is the Human Resources Director at Dakota Supply Group. Thanks so much for joining me, Christy.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So you're located in Fargo, I think, of movie fame in North Dakota.
Yeah, that's right. Fargo, North Dakota. Yes. Even though the movie wasn't filmed there, but yes.
No, I know. This is one of my favorite films though. So let's kick off by having you share a little bit about you beyond the fact that you're from North Dakota and what you do at Dakota Supply Group.
Okay. Sounds great. So I have been in human resources for almost 20 years. I've been at Dakota Supply Group for a little over a year and a half now. I have been fortunate to, over the last 20 years or so, been able to lead HR teams in some former fashion. So I don't lead the whole HR team here. I report up to a fabulous chief people officer, but I do have, I think it's, I should know this off the top of my head, 7, 8, 9 direct reports on my team. And we get involved. Talent acquisition reports up to me. Communication reports up to me. We have our HR business partners report up to me. And so I get involved with a lot of employee relations and performance management type conversations. And then I get to help with a lot of just special strategic projects from an HR standpoint as well. So we've got a few of those going on today too. So that's some of the areas I get involved with. Yeah.
Beautiful. Okay. And so what was your career path like on your way to where you are now?
Great question. Like a lot of people that work in human resources, I fell into HR. So I did not expect to have a career in HR. I knew I would I would like to do something from a business perspective, but I actually graduated college, my undergrad, not knowing a whole lot about HR, and got my first job as an HR assistant. So that's where I got a little bit of taste of HR initially. And then my HR career just continued to grow from there. So I kept on getting more and more responsibility in human resources. I did stumble into the engineering world, and I ended up working for an within the engineering world for about, I think it was probably about 16 of my 20 years in HR. So I do have a decent amount of background in engineering as well. And then I have worked almost exclusively in 100% employee-owned companies as well, which is another area that I gravitate towards.
Yes, and we're going to explore that employee-owned piece because I think it's really, really fascinating. So we'll dig into that in a second. So Dakota Supply Group. So this is a supply chain company with distribution centers, I believe, and trucks. Can you tell us a little bit more about what the company is all about?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we're Dakota Supply Group. We're about 1,000 employees, just over 1,000 employees. We have 54 branch locations over the Midwest. So everywhere from Montana down to Nebraska, North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa, Michigan, and Wisconsin are where we're currently located. And we do wholesale distribution. So the best way to think about it is anything inside of a building, we probably sell that. So whatever that might be, whether it's on the plumbing side, on the HVAC side, on the electrical side, we sell all of those products. And so we house them in our warehouse, and we work with quite a few different customers, but specifically, we work with a lot of contractors. So we do the wholesale supply to contractors within the building process is kind of the easiest way to explain it.
Yes, excellent. Okay, that's really helpful. Thank you for painting that picture.
Yeah.
So let's go to that employee-owned element because I know this is something from when you and I first met that you said you really enjoy. You've had several experiences now with companies that are employee-owned and that have,
Right.
what did you call them? They're ESOP.
Correct. ESOP.
Yeah.
Yep.
So they have an employee stock ownership plan. What is it that you like about this kind of setup?
So I have always said there's no better tool for an HR professional to have than for a company to be 100% employee owned. So when it comes to being able to recruit and retain employees, an ESOP is an amazing tool to have.
I can only imagine. And actually, listeners, if you've heard the episode with Nathan Diley, you'll connect to this because he's very passionate about this as well. So what does that do for culture, would you say?
It does a lot for culture. So when you are 100% employee owned, I always say there's two really big components of it for the employees. So one, there is the financial component, and I can talk more about that if that's helpful. But there's also the culture component. So at the end of the day, when you're 100% employee owned, you still have your normal hierarchy within an organization, like any other organization is going to exist. But because of the financial component of it, you get to reap the rewards of your hard work as an employee owner. So as an employee. So typically for an ESOP plan, there's a waiting period before you officially become an employee owner. So it's every company's different. Typically, it's not going to be on day one, but typically there's going to be a bit of a waiting period before you become an employee owner. And then once a year, typically companies will share what the stock price is going to be and the share price is going to be, and that you get part of that. Like you are now invested in those share prices as an employee owner. And so because of that, all of your hard work as an employee owner, you get a piece of that. You get a chunk of that. It isn't publicly held firm. It isn't going to shareholders or stockholders that you're never going to see or never talk to. It goes to you as the employee owner. So from a culture standpoint, it is a really good tool to, I think, create motivation, I think, to create a performance-driven organization because we all get to reap the rewards of that success that you experience as an organization. But then the other really great thing about ESOPs that I love is because you're employee-owned, typically, not all ESOPs are this way, but typically when you're 100% employee-owned, employees have a little bit more of a voice within the organization as well. They have a say in decisions or projects. And like I said, it's still the same hierarchy as any organization. And that is never going to change, I think, within an ESOP. But we have an ESOP committee. where we have all of our employees have an opportunity to be part of this ESOP committee. And that ESOP committee helps set the tone for different things within our organization and helps set the tone from a culture standpoint with this ESOP committee. I am in the midst of a really big project where we were making some changes to our commission plan. And we put together a committee of our employee owners to help us determine what this new plan was going to look like. It wasn't a top-down decision. And there, that certainly is always going to take place within an ESOP organization. So I guess what I'm trying to say is with an ESOP, the culture is a little bit different because there's opportunity for employees for voice to be heard. And some things happen bottom-up instead of top-down sometimes.
Right. Yeah. I think it's really fascinating. So it's Nathan's talked about it. And I think at least one other guest has talked about their experience with an ESOP. So what would you say? I like that you provide a little extra color, by the way, around the committee and that, you know, an example of a decision they might help with is input on the compensation plan changes. So when you think about listeners who may be listening in our conversation right now, and they do not work for that kind of organization, so there is not that ownership, there might be, you know, stock incentives and so on at the higher levels, for instance, but generally speaking, it's not 100% employee owned. What would you say are some important kind of tips or elements for them to consider that they can still do in spite of that?
So the first thing that comes to mind is one thing I just talked about, which is what I like about ESOPs is typically employees have a little bit more of a voice within an employee-owned firm. A company doesn't have to be employee-owned to be able to give your employees a voice. And when you think about engagement, you think about how you want to engage your employees. I think a big part of that is having a voice and being heard. So just thinking about that, if you have a big decision that needs to be made at a company or you have a big project you're working on, get the input of your employees. And I think that goes a really, really long ways. And then that also helps with buy-in on big change management projects too. So that's the first thing that would come to mind. Another thing that I've noticed working in ESOPs is the type of leadership it typically attracts within an employee-owned firm are typically a lot of leaders who are in leadership positions for the greater good of the organization. And I think what that means is leaders really care, and they really care for what's in the best interest of the greater good of the organization. And I think taking that mindset, if you're a leader and you're not an ESOP, but thinking about things that way, what's for the greater good of the organization, long-term, the greater good of my employees, the greater good of all that, and having that mindset, I think can go a really long ways as well.
Yeah, you know what's coming up for me too is just that's something I've done a lot of in my career is you know, doing leadership development and coaching with leaders around ownership mentality, right?
Right.
Thinking like the owner, thinking like the CEO. You make a really great point, right? So it might be a tad easier for them to wrap their heads around it when they actually are an owner. And at the same time, that concept I have seen it successfully kind of integrated, right? Like from an accountability perspective. So good. I think that's a great tip. Yeah. Also give them a voice. We can all in every organization do more listening than we do. There's always more opportunity for more input and for people to feel consulted. And that goes along with change management continuum. The one other thing too that came to mind as I was thinking about your tips here is in my last organization, Chartwell Retirement Residences.
Yep. Massive. I'm familiar with them.
Company. And we had it was baked into our performance management program, which was, you know, quite progressive given sort of where they were at with the whole system and how big it was. But your goals, the measurement was not based solely on your own individual performance. So on the company performance as it related back to four key performance indicators, right? So for instance, one of those being employee satisfaction, employee engagement results. So if we had not moved the dial on the overall annual goal, say we were trying to get that number to move by 1%, then, you know, the most senior leaders, if you were a VP as I was, I think it was like 80% was within my control and based on the results of my own teams, right? From my downstream. But 20% was based on whether the company got there overall.
That's great. Yes, that's a great way to create that ownership and that accountability mentality. Yeah.
And board, that's wonderful. Board would work with the C-suite to decide, you know, and you know, there were a couple of years where we didn't make all four. And, and so that did directly impact your performance ratings against certain goals and therefore how you were bonused.
Interesting.
So it's interesting because I think it's useful and it could be a demotivator in some cases because some people really, like it was early days, but hadn't really wrapped their head around.
Like what, how they're doing is impacting the full
business. Yeah. So there was some people sort of feeling, you know, this isn't fair and that's too big a chunk that is outside of my control. And so it was part of the cultural transformation we were trying to do towards a culture of accountability. So
yeah, very interesting. Yeah. I've seen that directly tied to bonuses. I've not seen it directly tied to performance reviews. So that's a very interesting way to do it. Because those two are connected.
It was paying for performance. It was full performance. So they were in that instance very, very well, actually. So yeah. So I think it's fascinating. So when you think about another question, sort of like as a tack onto this one, being an ESOP, employee-owned company, how does this show up in your talent acquisition processes and how you attract people?
Yeah, it's an amazing benefit. So from a long-term retirement standpoint, we offer a traditional 401k, like a lot of companies do. We have a competitive 401k, but in addition to that, we also offer the ESOP. So we have, it's on average about a 10% contribution that we're going to give to our employees on an annual basis. And it's 10% of their annual compensation that they get allocated into this ESOP account. So they just get that for being an employee owner of DSG. So think about that. The ESOP contribution in addition to our competitive traditional 401k contribution we do, like that, it's hard to compete with something like that. So it's a great tool. And then we also talk about the culture aspect, like the culture, the differentiation in our culture that it creates for our employee owners too. It's a pretty great way to be able to recruit employees. And because our culture is so great, we have a lot of our own employees that want to recruit as well, because it's such a great place to be. Why wouldn't my community or my people that I'm acquainted with, my friends, work here too? So it creates that expansion of recruitment outside of just the recruitment team too, because it creates a culture.
Which is the holy grail of talent acquisition.
It certainly is.
Yes, I've done that function many times. And that was always a big pillar of what we were trying to do, which was to not only look externally around how we brought in talent, but also, and how we found it, but also how we cultivated it internally and created ambassadors of our employees. So this really sounds drives that ambassadorship, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So it creates a very organic employee referral process. Yes.
Interesting. Sounds like we're going to making a case for this. All right. Anyway, let's kind of move along the path here. And I'd love to talk a bit with you around something that you and I had kind of, been discussing earlier, which is the importance of people leaders on overall, culture, on engagement. And I know this is an area of real passion for you. Tell us a little bit about your position, your philosophy.
Yeah. So the statistic I always refer back to, it's a Gallup statistic. So a lot of people are probably familiar to it, but managers more than any other factor influence team engagement and performance. So that's not an exaggeration. 70% of the variance in team engagement is determined solely by the manager. So you think about that, and it's like the data, the science, the research backs it up, how key that manager position is to create engagement within employees. But I think we've probably all experienced it too. We've all had good managers. We've probably had poor managers. We have all experienced it. So I think can just see for ourselves the impact it makes when you have a really strong people manager as well. So that's something that I've just really honed into in my HR role. And I've had the ability to coach and train and develop managers and try to get them to understand that never underestimate the impact you have on people's lives, both professionally and personally, because of your role as their manager. It is huge. So making sure they have the right feedback, the right communication, the right growth opportunities, the right development, they feel empowered, all those things are so key. And what I love about that, what I love about engagement, so it's the manager has such a huge role in engagement. And what I love about that is engagement to me is like when I think about the holy grail of HR, I think about engagement because it's such a win-win for businesses. Because if your employees are engaged, that means they're satisfied and probably pretty happy. Nothing's going to be perfect, but pretty happy with coming to work every day and what they get to do every day. But then that also means if your employees are engaged, you have probably a very high performing, high profitable organization and business. So engagement to me really is like that great intersection for creating a win-win for your employees and the performance of the organization.
Absolutely. I think the win-win is absolutely true. There's a direct alignment to bottom line results.
Yes.
So it's great for the company because, the company does need to be successful to keep employing the people and keep doing the things. And at the same time, we don't want to do it at the expense of employee well-being and satisfaction, right? Because we all just need a place to work that's safe, helps us make a good living and the place where, we're not dragging ourselves every day. So I think the win-win says it well. Something too that when you talk about the direct impact, so that Gallup stat, I've seen that one too, and it's well backed up. There's multiple studies around this. This has been around for a while, that direct impact of the frontline leader on people who report to them. And not just frontline, but
anyone.
Person who report to has often the greatest impact on our sense of engagement and belonging. Yeah. So for instance, I was just speaking actually just this morning before we got on here to record with a really wonderful client of mine out in Calgary, Alberta. And I was just out there last week. We were launching a 12-month program. And it's a team coaching approach around next level customer experience for a really large internal employee resource center. And so the approach we're taking is we're doing team coaching workshops for the leadership team. And then there's individual coaching for the managers. And then this is over the course of a year, so like quarterly training with a team coaching kind of approach for the direct employees. So the people on the phones handling employee inquiries for this massive organization. And the reason I bring this up is because I really think it's important that for this workshop, the supervisors of the managers for this team, they were also present.
Good.
So they're the ones that have the largest number reporting to them because they've got multiple incumbent roles, right? Say like 10 payroll people that report to one supervisor, and then there's two supervisors report to the manager. So if we only have the manager in there, we've already seen breakthroughs and had some real transformation begin. That's great. And yet they're early on in their learning journey. And so less well-equipped to be able to mentor and bring that to the next level. So we thought the supervisors don't, because of budget constraints, don't have the individual coaching, but we'll bring them in on the team piece.
That's great.
Like number wise. And the feedback was just so phenomenal because they're feeling kind of jazzed up and motivated. Like they have some really core tools they can use to get to create this next level customer experience. Anyways, that's went through my mind because it's win-win for everybody, even if people do the full enchilada, you know what I mean? With private coaching as well, so there's ways that we can kind of get at some of this. It kind of takes us back to when I said to you, what are your tips for, a non-ESOP HR leader, right? If you don't have that already as part of a natural kind of attraction mechanism, or engagement mechanism, what are some other ways? And it's interesting because we're actually getting at some of those.
Yes. Any company, whether you're ESOP or not, you have the ability to have really strong people managers. that are providing feedback, providing communication, constructive, positive, recognition, development, a voice, all that can happen anywhere.
Yeah. And it starts with recognizing that impact. Yep. Okay. Well, let's take a bit of a right-hand turn as we go down the path, because I'd love to explore another area of passion for you, mm-hmm. which is women in the workforce, women and moms mm-hmm. in particular. Mm-hmm. And you recently had the opportunity to speak at Disrupt HR locally about this topic. Congratulations on that. I'm sure
Thank
it was
you.
Very valuable. I wish I was able to hear it. So tell us a bit about, you know, why you have this passion, like what drives it and why is it important?
Yeah. So it's pretty natural just given my personal life, but I've been a woman in corporate America for almost 20 years now. And I've been a mom for almost 13 years in corporate America. I'm no longer in an executive position, but in a previous life, I've been in an executive position. So I think I've seen a lot, and I've seen some of the challenges that women face in the workforce. I've seen some of the challenges I've faced in the workforce. And so I care a lot about equity. And I think, especially when you think about inclusivity, diversity, equity, I care a lot about that. I care a lot about equity. And I think naturally, because this has impacted me, just given who I am as a human, I've just become really passionate about continuing to support women and moms specifically too, but always women in the workforce.
So is this something that you're talking about at Dakota Supply Chain?
So trying to do. So the two big areas when I got to speak at Disrupt HR that were takeaways for the business professionals I was speaking to was, one, having a robust parental leave, because there's a lot of research in the US. We are not extremely progressive when it comes to parental leave. We're getting there, but there's a lot of research out there that parental leave is an amazing tool you can have, where if fathers can spend more time with their children at the newborn stage, it's going to impact the relationship they have with their child and the trajectory of that relationship in a way where fathers are going to get more involved in the home and with childcare, which then means that women get more ability and moms get more ability to hopefully be at their jobs, in the workforce, at the office. So there's parental leave. And then I also talked about a new program within the state of North Dakota, which is progressive, I think, just for the US as a whole, where employers have the ability to subsidize childcare and they work with the state. So the state and the business can help subsidize the cost of childcare for certain income level families. And those are two things that Dakota Supply Group is doing. And I am so proud that I work for an organization that's doing both of those. And we've had a parental leave for a few years now. So Dakota Supply Group's been quite progressive with that. So from that standpoint, I haven't had to advocate a lot, but I have been involved with creating a Women in Industry group here. So we are just getting started. It rolled out, I think it was back in April, we rolled it out, and every single woman within the organization has the ability to get involved with this. It's called an employee owner resource group. So a lot of you have probably heard of employee resource groups. So we just put our own little spin on it. And it's another wonderful opportunity for our employees to have a voice here at DSG.
So I'm just wondering if you would know sort of what is the gender ratio at your company. Mm-hmm. Is it more male dominated?
Oh yeah. 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 So distribution as a whole is a pretty male dominated industry. Yeah. So our statistic is we have 16% females in our employee population, so which is pretty standard. It's a little bit higher actually for the distribution industry, and we have some pretty good goals when it comes to changing that statistic as well.
That is so fascinating. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Congratulations on that. And I love that you're kind of leading the way, modeling the way with some of the things that you offer internally, but you're sharing this externally through Disrupt HR, through this show, for instance. You know, and you and I were sort of chuckling in the green room before we hit record, because you know, I was saying how Canada, where I'm located, has, you know, 12 months maternity leave, and actually parental leave for spouses, that can be traded between them. So one parent could take 6 months, the other can take 6 months. It's been a while. My son is 17. I think that may be even a little more generous now.
That's fabulous.
And that's since 2000, since we moved to 12 months. Previous to that, it was 6 months, because I have a girlfriend who, her first son was born in 99. She got 6 months.
Oh.
Came around in 2001. My friend Becky, and she got 12 months. And I remember midway when Erin was only 6 months. She's like, how did I go back to work when her oldest was this age? She couldn't believe it. And yet I remember saying to her, boy, I've got all these U.S. colleagues who are gobsmacked that we get 6 months and now 12 because they get like up to, I know. 12, up to three, right?
Yeah, mind blown. That's amazing. Yeah, I have plenty of professional females that I know where they'll go back at 8 weeks. Newborn goes into childcare at 8 weeks old.
Oh, yeah. I've had lots of friends do that.
Yeah.
US and then Europe's a totally different story. They're all over the map too in terms of what they offer. But it is interesting if we think about the whys. Now, I can't say Canada often kind of is quite similar to the US in many statistics and so on. So in terms of, you know, gender equality and equity, you know, that's driven out of some of these more progressive policies that we do have, I don't have the quotes off the top of my head. I would tell you, though, that culturally, these are things that are highly, highly valued. And now there's been a lot of movement. Certainly Quebec's had it for a long time, but was subsidized like $10 a day daycare. So that's coming. It's actually in the province of Ontario now, here where I am. And I think BC's got something similar. So it's important. But this is what we need in order to have a vibrant, robust economic driver that is the workforce, right? We've got to support the over 50% of people, right?
That's exactly right.
And yeah, if we participate fully.
Yeah, if we want to be able to make some really good movement on the workforce shortage, especially here in the US, like childcare and better infrastructure around it is huge. Parental leave, a better infrastructure around it is huge. Yes. Yep.
Yeah. Well, thank you for bringing that important topic to bear, because I think it's really critical. I know a couple of people I've got to put you in touch with them who are really passionate about this.
Oh, I would love that. Yeah.
In industry. So
yeah.
Thank you very much. We kind of come to the end of our time together already, but I really appreciate you sharing with us a little bit about your passion areas and your experience. Thanks, Christy.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. It flew by, and thank you for having me.
My pleasure.
Thank you from the bottom of my heart for tuning in. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with your colleagues. Better yet, head over to iTunes and let us know. When you subscribe and leave me a 5-star review, not only do I glow from within, but more people will learn about the show and why they should listen. Until next time, keep telling the talent management truth.